Catherine Sharp, who spent the entire summer away from Newark experiencing real country life, was feeling so much better and declared her summer splendid, a vacation like I have never had. "I love to sit on the porch in the sun," she wrote dreamily, "and look out over the wide stretches of woodlands and hills." While sitting on that porch, she wrote to Berry to thank him for all he had done. "I myself know," she wrote, "that from a humanitarian viewpoint, it would be difficult to find another like yourself. There was nothing too much for you, and to think that the result now was such a tremendous success overwhelms me indeed." She also wrote to Martland, as did the other girls, saying simply, "I am writing to express my sincerest appreciation for your great assistance in bringing it all to a happy ending." A happy ending. If only that could be. Behind the scenes, Berry was most concerned that Catherine's happy ending was as fictional as a fairy tale. "I think that the matter is not by any means over," he wrote to an associate, "and that the actual contest has only been deferred." Following the settlement, USRC had immediately launched into damage limitation mode regarding what it dubbed so-called radium poisoning. It still denied any hazard existed and seemed confident that the medical board appointed to examine the girls would soon give all five a clean bill of health. The firm wasted no time in appointing two doctors who might well give that clearance. One was James Ewing, the radium medicine specialist who had already spoken out against Martland. One of Berry's doctor friends warned, he must be watched. And the other, mutually agreed appointment, was Lloyd Craver. Both were consultants at a hospital closely allied with the use of radium, but Berry found it impossible to keep them out. The girls' appointed physician would be Edward Crumbar. Martland wrote, "The damage is done now, and Berry must make the best of it." In the fall of 1928, the girls were summoned to a New York hospital for the first committee examination. Since two of the physicians denied the existence of radium poisoning, it is to be wondered what they thought of the suffering women who now came before them. Catherine was obviously very lame and bent over. Grace had distinct limitation of motion in her left elbow, and what remained of her jawbone was exposed in her mouth. Quinta was in plaster casts. Edna's legs irrevocably crossed. Yet as the women stripped and underwent invasive medical exams, conducted by these doctors who were strangers to them, it was perhaps Albina's condition that shocked the physicians most. Crumbar later said, "Mrs. Larice had marked limitation of motion of both hip joints, so that it was almost impossible for Dr. Craver to make a vaginal examination." The doctors conducted a breath test, two of them convinced it would clear the company. Yet the results, as Ewing wrote afterwards, proved positive, rather to our surprise. Rather than take this as evidence the girls were telling the truth, he continued, "The question now arises whether there might be some kind of fraud by the patient. To make the tests absolutely trustworthy, we think it will be necessary to carry them out at some hotel where the patients can undress." The girls would have to go through it all again.